It is truly a time of great challenge for the Jewish nation. Our young children are targeted, innocent though they are. Our soldiers are sent into the teeth of the beast, exposed and vulnerable, in an attempt to rid the enemy of their murderous tools. And families hunker down in bomb shelters, together with their children, waiting for the terrifying trill of the sirens to cease. How many of us don't know personally of a terrible tzara in our community? A young mother fighting a dreaded disease, the sudden death of a father of a large family, a young child locked in mortal battle with a silent and invisible foe. During this time of the 3 weeks between Shavuot and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, we reflect on our historic challenges and trace them back to the Churban. We seek answers to our most pressing questions. Why us? What does it mean? What does Hashem want from us? How do we end the suffering? Indeed, this reflection, this quest for answers, is the first step in our way back home. I would like to thank Rabbi Rosenbaum and the Young Yisrael Shomri Emunah for their strong partnership with the Kolo and for hosting this event. I would like to thank the Shomri office, in particular Mr. Rosenberg, for their assistance in making this possible. And I would like to thank Rabbi Yonatan Zakum, our Director of Community Outreach, for heading the effort. It is a pleasure to have Rabbi Moshe Hauer with us to share words of insight and inspiration. Rabbi Hauer is the beloved rabbi of Congregation B'nai Jacob, Shari Zion, in Baltimore. In addition to his dedication to his congregation, Rabbi Hauer has undertaken many responsibilities in the greater community, with an emphasis on social and educational matters. Rabbi Hauer is the founding editor of Klal Perspective, an online journal exploring solutions for the many challenges facing the contemporary Orthodox family, and lectures on a wide variety of topics on Jewish law and thought, including support groups for families and individuals facing traumatic illnesses, infertility, and special needs. It is a pleasure to call on Rabbi Hauer to share with us Divrei Chizuk.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, I would like to thank Rabbi Winter and the Kol for inviting me, and a special, special thank you and appreciation to Rabbi Rosenbaum with his permission. I stand before you tonight as we are in the middle of a war of the Jewish people. You know, I usually try to follow the dictum which is found in the Gemara that when one speaks, especially to an unfamiliar audience, it's good to warm things up by starting with a joke. I'm not going to do it tonight. I'm not going to do it tonight because it just doesn't feel like that's the way that we should connect, that that's the way that we should break through. In yesterday's Parsha, we read about how Reuven and Gad, two tribes of the Jewish people, requested that they should have their portion on the other side of the river, on the other side of the Yarden. They thought it would be more suitable for them. Moshe Rabbeinu, after some back and forth, agreed. He said it would be okay. As long as they came to join them in the fight, they could go back afterwards and settle there. But we have a little surprise, because after he grudgingly agrees, he places there not only Reuven and Gad, but he places there half of the tribe of Manasseh. And they never asked to be there. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do that? And perhaps part of the answer to this question is that the greatest risk that this choice of Reuven and Gad posed was a risk that was borne out later in Sefer Yehoshua when they actually went to settle in their land after the dust had settled from the battle, was that the Jewish people would become two communities. a community on this side of the Yarden and a community on that side of the Yarden. That was the risk. And in order to make sure that even if they were living in different places, divided by that body of water, that they would still be one people, one family, Moshe Rabbeinu said, we will take one shevet, one tribe, one family, quite literally, and we will split it in two. Half will be on this side, half will be on that side. So never for a moment will there be an impression that this is two separate people. I'm sure that many of you have seen the Yarden, the Jordan River. It's not one of the more imposing bodies of water in the world. It's not even at its widest, quite as wide as the Atlantic Ocean. And if Moshe was worried about a sense of distance, but about an actual distance, creating a sense of distance there, how much more so should we worry? But we're also Chatzi Shevet Menashe. Because I imagine everybody here in this room has the one or two points of separation from someone or many who are in the middle of this. Just sitting here a few minutes ago before the lecture, my friend and neighbor was telling me about his son who's sitting on the Gaza border waiting for the call, should he have to go in, should he have to enter. We're a chatzi shevet. We're half of a family, and a big part, and a very important part of our family, is in a different place, in a very different situation. And our task, first and foremost, during this difficult time for the Jewish people, is to feel that. To feel intensely the connection, to relate personally and deeply to the tzara, to the stress, to the losses which are being experienced by the Jewish people, and to react in that way appropriately. Rav Chaim Shmulevitz, the great Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir Yeshiva, who came with them from Poland to Shanghai, to Yerushalayim, in the back of the more modern editions of his Sichos Musar, of his classic talks, they print six talks, six shmuzin, which he gave starting on Erev Sukkot, Tavshin Lamed Gimel, Tavshin Lamed Dalet, 1973, during the Yom Kippur War. And they're really a must. A must for people to read. I believe they're published in the English version also, Rav Chaim's discourses. To read the empathy, the passion, the concern. And he writes there about the mandate for anybody who's not there right at the front to be davening. To daven for an obvious reason. Because Eilav Arecha Eilav Asusim V'Anachnu B'Shem Hashem Elokeinu Naskir, the Jewish approach to battle has always had as a critical element prayer. And the soldiers need us to do that, especially with full dedication while they are busy fighting the fight. But Rav Chaim said, it's not just to provide the spiritual energy. The tefillahs, the prayers which it behooves us all to be saying whenever we hear of one of these events, not just in the neat moment of the end of davening when a psalm is said. The prayers are an expression of pain, of connection. We cannot in any which way insulate ourselves from what Achenu Kol Beis Yisrael, our brothers, the Jewish people, from what Chayalei Tzva Hagana Yisrael, the greatest Oskim B'Tzorchei Tzibur Be'emunah, those who are most involved in putting their lives on the line for the future of the Jewish people, We can't forget about them. We can't insulate ourselves from what they, and their families are experiencing. When Chazal tell us that on Shivasar B'Tammuz five things happen in different periods, when they tell us that on Tisha B'Av five things happen, and that was what they counted at the time of the Mishnah, history continued and added to that list. When they said that to us, they were telling us that these days and this period is not to be marked simply as a remembrance of something that happened once upon a time, but that Jewish life and Jewish history is a continuum. And what occurred, what started then, continues to unfold. There's a reason why on Tisha B'Av, when we say the kinos, all those lamentations of Tisha B'Av, we don't just mourn over the Churban. We have generations of tzaras, generations of Jewish tragedy which are remembered in specific laments, in specific paragraphs which we say there, and we roll them all into this time of commemoration. Because we see it as part of one ongoing challenge of Jewish history, started then, but continuing now. It would seem that perhaps that's what's meant when in the Gemara it speaks about what actually happened when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. And it describes how really they set fire to the Beis HaMikdash on the very last moment of the ninth of Av. And the Beis HaMikdash really burned down, not on the ninth, but on the tenth. And Rabbi Eichlan said, had I been there, I would have probably made the fast on the 10th of Av, because that's when that Beis HaMikdash really burnt down. But the rabbis of the time, they said, the Aschalta de Puranusa, the beginning of the difficulty, when the fire was first set, that's what counts. That's what we should commemorate. And it would seem that what is meant by that is, Rabbi Yochanan said, had I been there at the time, I just would have seen the tragedy of the time. That's what happens. When you live through a period, what you see is what's in front of you. You don't have the luxury and the wisdom of a step back to see a broad panorama. Had I been there, I would have said, this is the tragedy of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and it was really destroyed on the 10th. But the Rabbanan, the rabbis of the time, they took a step back and they said, you know, it's not just this event. This is a beginning. This is a change which is coming to the Jewish people, which will have effect long after the destruction of this Beis HaMikdash. And it has. And so we're here, still, of course, marking the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, still yearning and praying for its reconstruction, but also remembering and noting so many churbanos, so many tragic periods of our history. And we are sitting here, especially with the frame of reference of our own time, seeing correctly what we are experiencing as part of that continuum. I'm going to speak to you tonight about something that you all know, that you all cherish, that you all value. I don't know if I'm going to tell you anything new. At times like this, and with challenges like this, I don't know if it's the job of someone speaking to a group of people to tell them brilliant new ideas. We need sometimes to strengthen and to move ourselves to the bread and butter of what our task in life as individuals and as a community really is. I don't have to tell you what you all know that the Gemara says that the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, because of needless hatred, infighting within the Jewish people. The Meshech Chachma, Rav Meir Simcha of Zinz, classically explained that at the root of all evil, at the root of all failings that we have in our lives, in our national life, there are two big events. There are two big events which happened to the Jewish people. Biblical events, well before the destruction of the two Batei Mikdash. There was the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, the ultimate act of rejecting the holiness, the bond with Hashem that was forged. One day, he speaks to us at Har Sinai. 40 days later, he hands over the Luchos, the greatest gift that could be given. He hands it over to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu descends from the mountain to discover that the Jewish people are dancing around and worshiping a golden calf. And he smashes the Luchos on Shivos or Betamos, on the 17th of Tamos. That was the ultimate, the original Bein Adam LaMokom, the original violation of our obligations to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And then there was another paradigmatic Aveira, paradigmatic wrong that we committed. And that was before that one. It was Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef. When the brothers gathered together to sell their brother down the river, to sell him as a slave to Mitzrayim. And that, says the Meshech Chachma, was the model, the original, Aveira Shebein Adam L'Chaveira, a destructive act within the community, cutting some out of the community, infighting, Sinas Chinam. And the first Beit HaMikdash, we know, was a place which was like the first Luchos. The first Beit HaMikdash was, in fact, home for the second Luchos and the Ark of Hashem. The first Beit HaMikdash had all the magnificent elements of the presence of Hashem resting in the house, the cloud and the fire and the prophecy and all those wonderful things. And it was destroyed by big Averis, by the big three, the cardinal sins, Gilui Arayos, Shvichus Domim, Avodah Zarah, immorality, murder, idol worship, all Averos, as the Maharal explains, that are called by Tumah, impurity, something that are inhospitable to a special divine presence. And it destroyed that Mikdash. But then came the second Beis HaMikdash. And it didn't have any of those things. It didn't have Luchos. It didn't have prophecy. It didn't have a visible presence of Hashem. What was it? Says the Maharal, the second Beit HaMikdash was the communal core and center of the Jewish people. If God wasn't visibly there, but it was still that which brought all of the Jewish people together. And so he says what destroyed it was not a modern day version of the golden calf, but what destroyed it was a modern day version of the sale of Yosef. Sinas Chinam. When the community is divided, what is left of a Mikdash, of a temple whose entire being is just that, that it brings the people together? And we are still suffering the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. That destruction because of distance, hatred, the lack of that national unity and cohesion which could create such a place. And that, for all of us, has been, without a doubt, the focal point of the past month. All of this started, for all of us, with that Erev Shabbos, when we got news of the apparent abduction of those three beautiful young men, Gilad, Eyal, Naftali. An event which truly brought an achdus, a unity in the Jewish people that had been a long time coming. An irony of the time was that a couple of weeks ago we read in the Parsha about a war that we fought against the Knani, Yosef HaNegev. They came to fight us, Vayish Mimenu Shevi, and they took a single prisoner. They took a single captive. And the Jewish people were mobilized. And they went to war. And they promised. They said, Hashem, give this nation into our hands. We will dedicate everything that comes from this war, we will dedicate it for you. That war over a single captive, that war followed the model of the original war fought by the original Jew. Avram Avinu fought a war. Avram Avinu went to fight against the Arba Malachim over what?
Over Lot.
Over Lot, correct. Over one person. Over his nephew, his brother-in-law. Estranged somewhat, but nevertheless, nothing would stand in the way. This is what a Jew goes to war for. A brother, a family member, someone who is lost. That's what moves the Jewish people. It's what moved Avram Avinu. It's what moved the Jewish people at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it's what moved Kol Yisrael at this point. Yes, it didn't move us to the war itself immediately, but it moved us to understand that Vayish Mimenu Shevi, one captive, should indeed energize every one of his brothers, every one of his sisters. And that's what it did. The bond and the commitment of Jews assuming responsibility for each other. That was the engine behind all of what we've experienced this time. And Baruch Hashem, thank goodness, it was sustained. And by and large, it continues to be sustained. And it made a difference. You know, when we heard 18 days later about the tragic news of the death of the three boys, after all those tefillahs, after all those prayers, after all those good deeds done in their merit, and nothing, and in fact perhaps realizing that all those tefillahs and all those prayers were, so to speak, after the fact, in a position where they couldn't change directly that which we prayed for. We could have experienced something of a crisis of faith, a major disappointment. But we couldn't, because we had these incredible models of Emunah. How could we lose faith from afar over the loss of these three boys who we knew them from their pictures when their mothers, when their fathers stood like rocks with their emunah intact and strong? And why was their emunah so strong? How were they able to have such faith in the face of such unspeakable tragedy? I'm sure there are many elements to it, but I think that without a doubt, one of them one of the main things which helped them in the struggle, what gave them the faith to continue, was each and every person here. Each and every one of you, each and every one of us, each and every one of the hundreds, the thousands, the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, I don't know where to stop. But probably the millions of Jews all over the world who were just davening for them. And if I may, I don't want you to take my word for it. I want to just share with you their words. Bat Galim Shar, speaking to her son Gilad, when she did not yet fully know that he was no longer alive. There's a whole nation here waiting with us for you, looking forward to your coming home. In Israel and throughout the world, they have united in anticipation of your return. And when you do come home, you will discover that our family has really grown, that you have brothers and sisters all across the world. Iris Yifrach. Eyal, the whole nation has united worrying about you. We want you home already, and we are waiting to warmly embrace you. And I turn to you, our wonderful Am Yisrael. It so moves and strengthens us to see this nation united across the spectrum through this difficult period we are experiencing together. Let us be strong and embrace one another, and let us all daven for the safe return of our sons. And Racheli Frankel, the love that we feel here is keeping the boys strong. This tragic story has shaken us up and brought us together, uncovering for an extended moment the shared foundation of our existence here, our achva, our brotherhood. This morning we visited in Hebron and we saw bleary-eyed chayalim who had not been home for a long time. We approached them to thank them for their efforts for our sons, and they responded, Matoda, bishvil zeit kayasnu. Why do you thank us? This is why we enlisted. This is what we signed up for. This emuna was forged by a lifetime. But it was strengthened and made so strong at this time of need because they were not alone. They were the opposite of alone. They felt that everybody was with them. And not feeling alone. The Achdus of Am Yisrael is not just a matter for nice slogans. Better we should work together than squander our energies fighting each other. Love your fellow Jew. But it is really... it's really the most basic building block of our emunah, of our faith. When you see, lo'aleinu, faith lost, bitterness, isn't it usually so deeply associated with a sense of loneliness? Avram Avinu, that first Jewish soldier, that Mamin, who brought so many people to faith, how did he do it? You know what the Gemara says? Avram Avinu, he would invite people in, travelers, he would give them to eat, he would give them to drink. And when they would finish, they would say, we would like to thank you. We'd like to thank you for feeding us, for giving us, for taking care of us. And Avram Avinu said, don't thank me. I didn't do it. Thank the Rabbanu Shlalom, from whom it came. And the Maharal of Prague explains that Avram Avinu here wasn't doing shtick. He wasn't figuring out some clever way to get his guests in the door and then force them to bench. But Avraham Avinu was dealing here with a group of people, with individuals, who were traveling from place to place, trying to eke out a living. They weren't home. They had nothing to eat. They were feeling miserable. They were forsaken. They were all by themselves. The thoughts running through the minds of people like this as they trudged through the desert were undoubtedly, if God really cared about me, why would he leave me like this? And so explains the Maharal, when Avraham Avinu brought them in, they finally said, somebody cares about us. And Avraham Avinu became their solace. Avraham Avinu became their source of comfort. And Avraham Avinu turned and he explained to them, says, it's not me acting alone. The way Hashem made this world is that he makes people with needs and he makes people with resources. Sometimes those needs are financial and the resources are financial. And those who have are there to share what Hashem gave to deliver it to those others. Sometimes the needs are not financial. Sometimes they're for companionship. And Hashem puts us here for each other. And Avraham Avinu says, if I have succeeded today to make you feeling a little bit taken care of, understand that's Hashem taking care of you. And it's so real, because when we do feel taken care of, we have room for our faith to continue and to grow. It's in loneliness that bitterness grows. It's in loneliness that emunah, that faith falters. And this togetherness, the sense of unity, of mission, of belonging, of being cared for, of understanding that what they were going through, these families, these magnificent families, was not something that was just happening there in a world where they were just twisting in the wind by themselves with nobody knowing. We knew, we noted, we cared. And that helped them understand the fundamental emuna, the fundamental bitachon that the Chazon Ish taught us and articulated, that it is not for the person of faith to believe that everything's going to be just fine, that the happy ending that we hope for, God will deliver, will come true. It doesn't always. And we don't know without prophecy. Or as Racheli Frankel said, in words which will live on for generations, Hashem is not our employee. We can't just tell him what to do. But bitachon, trust, emunah, faith, is that we're not alone. And the same way, each of us, all of us, played a role in strengthening and maintaining the emunah, the faith, of those families, by our being there with them, that they knew, that they felt. We need to do it for each other. We need to make sure that everybody around us is not experiencing life and its challenges alone. If we leave them alone from us, we are likely also to some degree closing the door on their feeling any connection, even the connection to the Rabbanu Shlomo himself. Sinas Chinam destroys not just the Jewish community center. It destroys the Beis HaMikdash. It felt so good, didn't it? how many emails did you get of pictures, of stories, of videos, of Hasidic Rebbes davening under the chuppahs of their children for these kids from Rav Steinsaltz's yeshiva, and it warmed our hearts, of secular people sitting on the bus next to religious people and asking if they could say Tehillim together with them, of all of us coming together, seeing from one end to the other a Jewish people that is so fractured so often, but coming together, is there anything that feels quite so good? Tam Gan Eden, a taste of paradise. Me'ein Olam Haba. Could you do me a favor, please? Could you nod your head if you agree with me? It was such a tragedy that was unfolding, and I don't know when we ever felt so good. It's weird. It's strange. And in a certain sense, you know, that's continuing now. It's continuing now. Why does it take this? You know, we all have Avos Yisrael. And we all will say all the time how much we love each other. But we have differences between us. Significant differences. Differences in principle. And they're differences that matter. We would be naive and foolish to paper them over. We have serious differences in approach, and we feel passionately about them. We feel that they will make a difference and impact on the Jewish future. And so, this is the way it usually goes. In the best of times, we say, we love you! But and over the past few weeks, we experienced what we rarely experience. And that is that Klal Yisrael, all of Klal Yisrael, from one end to the other, just said, we love you. No ifs, no ands, and no buts. We just said, we love you. When do we write those articles and essays that just say, we love you? When do we stop each other in the street and just say, hello, we love you, we care for you? That's Bias Gael Tzedek. You know, you taste it. You can taste it in the Mokum HaMikdash, in the place of the Beis HaMikdash. If you go to Daven at the Kaisel on the men's side of the Mechitza, you can't just go and daven by yourself. You have to have a minyan. If you go to daven at the Kaisel, what's your minyan going to consist of? It's going to consist of the next 10 people. It doesn't matter. That's de rigueur. You know, here you, in America, you come to a shul and you see people who have two shades of black yarmulkes and you say, wow, what a diverse congregation. You'd go to the kaisel, the tel talpiyos, where everybody goes, and you'll have a chassid and a litai, as they call it there, and a svardi and an American tourist who doesn't know exactly what he is, and people who got the yarmulke from the bin on the way down to the kosel, and they'll all just 10 yidden, well, they're going to daven together. And k'nei nohara, I've had the privilege to daven at the kosel hundreds of times, and once in that entire time I was witness to tension between members of the minyan. And that was when there was a chassidish of Bal Tfila who skipped tachnun at mincha and a few litvaks got upset at him. You know, if we're not talking principle, we can do pretty well together. But when do we just say it? When do we say it? How can we stop? How can we stop and just say it, embrace each other? I'm asking you almost a rhetorical question. But it's important that we realize, in a certain sense, the warmth that this period has brought us and build from it, to turn a page for the Jewish world. Yes, maybe it's ambitious, but we have to be ambitious. It's too much. Genug shein. When you taste something and it's so good, you want the recipe, you want to replicate it. So that's it. That's the recipe. Stop sometimes, oftentimes, and say, we love you, we're connected, we can be together. We'll have time to have our arguments in principle. But not every we love you has to come with the buck. Look what it can do. Hillel Omer Haveimi Talmidov Shalaron Olev Shalom Verodev Shalom. Hillel says you should be a student of Aaron HaKohen, who loved peace and pursued peace. What does it mean that Aaron loved peace and pursued peace? You know the stories. Chazal tell us, Avos Rabbi Nosson, Aaron HaKohen, he got wind of the fact that two people weren't getting along. He would go to the one and he would visit him. Let's say his name was Chaim. And he would say to him, Chaim, how are you? I'm okay, pretty much okay. He says, Chaim, you know, I was just visiting with Yanko. And he was beating himself up. He was saying, I feel so terrible. I feel so terrible about what I did to Chaim. How insensitive of me. I hurt his feelings. And Chaim says, Yanko was saying that? Really? Really? He felt bad about what he did to me? Oh my. And Aaron HaKohen would quickly excuse himself and go a few blocks away. And he would go to Yanko. And he would say, Yanko, how you doing? I'm doing okay, sort of. He says, no, Yanko, I was just with Chaim. And he was saying to me, oh, I can't believe what I did to Yanko. He would make up these stories. And Chaim thought Yanko regretted, and Yanko thought Chaim regretted. And Chaim and Yanko would go out into the street, and they would meet each other, and they would go over to each other, and they would collapse into each other's arms. He did this with friends. He did this with husbands and wives. It's a new method of Shalom Bayis counseling. And he brought people together. I have Shalom, but I have Shalom. He would meet people in the street, people who were very different than him, and very much on a different, lower, moral level than him. And he would look him in the eye and he would say, good morning, Shalom Aleichem. And the person would say, does Aaron HaKohen know who he's talking to? Walk back. But he smiled at him and he said hello. And the person would walk on and say, you know, oh boy, look at that. There's that purse. I'm going to snatch it. And then he said, 1 second. Maybe tomorrow morning, Aaron HaKohen will pass me by again and he'll say hello and he'll look me in the eye. How will I be able to look him in the eye after doing that? So, you know, maybe I don't need to do this. Aaron HaKohen, I have Shalom, I have Shalom. Beautiful stories. But asks the Maharal of Prague, I don't get it. These are nice stories. But where in the Torah does it tell us anything about Aaron doing that kind of thing? There's a hint, Vayivku Eisei Kol Beis Yisrael. But in the Torah, we're told plenty about Aaron. Where do you see that this was the kind of stuff that Aaron did? Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. And the Maharal says that Aaron HaKohen, indeed, that was his job. He was the Kohen Gadol. And the Kohen Gadol was interesting because his job security depended on that Migdash thing, on that Mishkan thing. Without it, he's out of business. And there is the Beis HaMikdash, there's just one. You know that? Remember what we said before at the beginning? The Mikdash is one for all of the Jewish people. The nations of the world, you know, they had all kinds of. But the Mikdash, they had one. And by the way, in the Mikdash, they also only had one minion. And you know what? Everybody had to go and subscribe to the same one. It didn't matter whether the Levim sang a lot during davening in the Beis HaMikdash, or they sang a little during the davening. You went to the same Beis HaMikdash. And so Aaron HaKohen said, if we're going to be able to have this one place, I got to make sure that the Jews can get along. I got to make sure that everybody can feel like they belong here. So says the Maharal, to be the Kohen Gadol, he had to do this. It's implicit. If you want to build a Beis HaMikdash, you have to bring everybody together. You have to make it into one people. And I know it's idealistic and not so realistic. Everybody has exactly what they want, but on some level, we need to actually hear that voice of Aaron, Oyev Shalem V'Roidev Shalem, and saying to us that it doesn't matter where exactly you think you belong, we really all belong together. That's what this period of time has taught us. In a sense, we've tasted a little bit of what that Geula HaAsida shall be, what it will feel like. And if I may just conclude with an image, which to me is, I don't know, it's just an image, a riveting image, for what this Geula, what it's all supposed to look like and feel like. Through all our time, from that original Aveira of Sinas Chinam, that paradigmatic, interpersonal sin, wrongs that divided our people, the Mechiras Yosef, the sale of Yosef. Now Yosef HaTzadik, before he died, he turned to his brothers and he said, one day Hashem's going to remember you and take you out of Mitzrayim. He's going to take you out of Golos. And when he does, please, Zalisem es atzmeisai mizei etchem, I want you to take my remains, my bones, I want you to bring them with you. And of course, simply we understand that it was simply too difficult for Yosef to be taken out of Mitzrayim right when he died. It was hard for him to take Yaakov out, but he was able to because he was the king, the viceroy. But he knew his brothers wouldn't be able to pull it off. So he says, when you leave, you'll take me with you. But there's a much deeper picture there. And that is that Yosef HaTzadik notes to his brothers that when we came into Golos, how did we come into Golos? You sent me down to Mitzrayim. You, my brothers, you separated from me. You didn't feel like my brother. He siu es atzmechem min ha'achva, es atzmechem min ha'achva. You turned away from a feeling of brotherhood. And that's how you ended up sending me down here. He says, one day, you're going to come out of this Golos. And the way you're going to come out of this Golos is by all of you getting together and picking me up and bringing me right back to Shechem from where you sent me away. And that's the image. That's the image that we must have can have in our eyes about what it's going to look like when the Rabbeinu Shel Olam Pokoid Yifkoid Beisano, when he will remember us. When he will remember us, we will be picking up, carrying together brothers and sisters from whom we felt estranged, and we'll be working for them and helping them and making sure that they're not alone. That the sinas chinam is so profoundly reversed into what Rav Kook famously called avas chinam. And we can start it. We can start it when we turn to the people next to us, who we don't know so well. We can start it when we turn to neighbors and people who we meet every Wednesday when we go shopping in the supermarket and pass by them every week. And we can, this time we can hang up our phone and say, you know, I see you every week. What's your name? Hello. We love you. No if, no and, no but. And with that, Bezat Hashem, we will be zeicha, we will merit to carry each other back to a geula shalema that will erase profoundly all of the tzar and all of the tzoros b'mehera b'yameinu.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Hauer. I think we have some food for thought, some marching orders to be mechazik each other and emunah and faith, and to reach out to one another in harmony and avas chinam. And as we know as parents, there's no greater joy to look at our children and see them together in harmony, and it should be the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to look down on us, to see us together in love and harmony, and send Mashiach Tzidkenu to redeem us and bring us back to Yerushalayim from Herev Yemenu. Thank you for joining us. Meir will be in the room over here. We'll start soon.